kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We still don't have Cole, but Chris is back. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. It was like 70 plus degrees today because Texas.
So you had an ice storm that took you out for a week, and now it's 70 degrees?
Yes, it immediately went to like warmish. And as far as like the, you know, collateral damage goes and everything like that, our electricity, of course, is back. And we've just been kind of struggling to get water back. I think we got like water back kind of yesterday, and today we kind of got water pressure back, and tomorrow we might get hot water back.
Ooh, which means you might shower finally.
Yeah, actually, funny enough, we,
Oh, Pernell's here too, by the way.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm not important. We got to talk about Chris getting a shower.
We ended up at a coworker's house yesterday to borrow their shower. And neither I nor Catherine had ever met these people in person. But then
how is that possible?
Because her job is completely like from home.
Oh, so even pre-COVID.
Yeah. Well, she got the job during, but it's still a remote job. And so, yeah, we got to meet some coworkers and borrow their shower and meet their dogs. It was nice.
Gotta say, though, there's something nice about the fact that, like you said, you had never met them prior. And they were just like, yeah, come into our house and just hang out with us.
Yeah.
Pet our dogs, eat our food. Like,
That's kind of how it is in Texas, I think, especially amongst us like nerdy types. And you know, we all just like weathered a storm, so it's like there's a lot of, you know, as soon as somebody's back up, they're like, okay, I'm back up, everybody that needs something come to my place.
That's so pretty awesome.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna lie, like, I can tell you now where I'm at on the East Coast. I don't see it happening on some house like, yo man, see, you got no power. You smell bad? Come here and clean up. They're like, keep your stinky ass over there somewhere free. I'm giving a shit. This is the East Coast.
I wouldn't invite anybody into my house that I didn't know because of, you know, all this shit behind me.
Yeah. Well, don't get me wrong. It's not, it doesn't have to be so much anyone knowing that you're someone you don't know. But I mean, like, even like a resident, say like someone on your block, right? Like, you may not know them like personally, but they're close enough and you see them regularly enough that in times of roughness, like what Chris and them have dealt with, you would almost hope that someone like, you know, I've seen this guy around. He's not too bad off. I don't want to see him, you know, going around with the water. Hey, come on, get some water from my house. Like, yeah, I got a lot of stuff in here too, but I want to at least be able to trust some of my neighbors. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a couple where I'm like, keep your ass out there. I'll bring the water to the door. But same time, I mean, like, I want to help on this.
It's a strange thing. You know, the way Texas is because, you know, the majority of it, like almost everybody in Texas and there's other places in the South, I'm sure as well, that kind of have this vibe. It's like, yeah, it is very like, you know, if you see somebody in need, unless they're out on the street, like literally, then they get ignored. But, you know, if you know of somebody who needs something, then you're just like really, you know, giving and stuff. But then like, much more than half of like people in Texas like vote for things that are like just downright cruel. it's very like inner circle compassion is what is big in the South.
Man.
It's like, yeah, if I see you struggling, then I will help you.
But if I don't see it, it ain't happening.
If somebody tells me someone's struggling, then I'm just
I'm not listening. Yeah.
Well, we all struggle.
It's your show, man. You gotta listen.
I know, right? We got Joe to not listen.
I don't want to pay attention to you guys.
Well, that's okay, because my story was done, so.
Right.
Well, I'm glad that you're back on the show. We missed you last week. It's good to have you back. We're still without Cole. Hopefully soon. Fingers crossed this week on Thursday, maybe she'll be back. They said that there's been trucks in the area getting shit done, so fingers crossed. She's been like a week and a half, close to 2 weeks without power.
Yikes. That blows my mind, honestly. And she posted that picture where she said, what was it like, why are you guys without power? And she posted like some of the stuff that's happening there. And it really does make me just realize that the reason why she's probably out of power isn't so much just the damages that were done, but it really is that her area is so rural. Because like if this was like, say, Philadelphia or even like a Philadelphia suburb, for example, the stuff that she took photos of, that stuff would have probably been repaired by now. Mm-hmm. But the manpower to do the work out there probably is low. So someone has to come from like a bigger city or something to do the work. That'd be a pain in the butt.
One of them city folk got to head out to the country.
It ain't the same if she's not actually here to say shut up.
I know. It hurts. He's not even in chat tonight.
And the ridiculous thing is, too, about like Texas is that, you know, a lot of us have gone without power and a lot of people got into some really dire situations. But it's like it's not because it's literally because like we opted to go off of the interstate grid and like just have our own power in like a huge display of hubris from the people who own said power grid. Like, you know, one little, but I mean, you know, a polar vortex storm like comes through like it does because global warming's a thing. It's disrupting the vortex. And, you know, like, yeah, they shut down and like then they're, you know, keeping it off because somebody raised the price of fossil fuel because we're like 90% dependent on fossil fuel still. And, you know, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, the leadership down there is blaming the Green New Deal.
Don't chat to the wrong person. I'm going to tell you, it's that 20%, it's the 20% airborne, you know, wind power that's causing this problem. Everybody screwed up. Please, I have a guy in my feed that was doing that crap. I was like, this is the shittiest take you've ever shat out your goddamn mouth. Like, here's the comptroller's fucking website. This isn't even hard to find. Like, just stop being stupid. But
yeah, the windmills. Also, people from other states don't realize how big Texas is because, like, all the windmills are in West Texas in, like, just this huge area that's, like, the size of any one of the other continental states. That, like, I would never see one. I would have to drive for 3 hours that way to see a windmill. Like, windmills are not part of, like, the equation, really. And plus, like, they're running in the Arctic just fine, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they didn't winterize their stuff. It was outright confirmed. Like, they vehemently decided not to winterize, which, don't get me 100% wrong. In some context, I can almost perceive someone doing that and being like, whoops, we fucked up because it is Texas. And
we do that a lot.
Well, not that. You know what I mean? Like, it's a thought that it might get cold, but people don't generally think of Texas and go harsh winters. I mean, I've read this. They said it was like the biggest storm you've had, like, what, 10, 15 years? So it's like, this was like an unprecedented storm, so they probably were like doing the whole kick the can thing. Like, yeah, we're not going to have to worry about that just yet. Let's put that money into something that's like a barbecue, like a huge community barbecue pit.
Big barbecue pit.
Yeah. Well, and like that's the other thing is that like the people, like, you know, they're clowns on the national stage, but we have to like deal with Ted Cruz and Mitt Romney like all the time.
They just come to your house like, hey, neighbor, mind if I come and use your bathroom?
Like, you know, Greg Abbott and all those guys, like, you know, I don't know how much they, you know, people who are only in Texas government, like, get around. But, man, like, dealing with that buffoonery in, like, your, and that actually, like, affects your day-to-day is, But, you know, I've had a nice little chill week to think about all this.
I got to ask this question. I'm hoping for a good answer, of course. But just making sure you weren't one of the people that got, well, because you lost power, so that's one thing, but you weren't one of the people that got fucked over by the freaking $13,000 electric bills and junk I'm hearing about, were you?
No, I mean, time will tell, because, you know, it's the month hasn't passed yet, but, you know, we're on a fixed billing thing, so it should be fine. But, you know, there's also, like, if they actually tried to pull those moves, which they're trying to, but if they actually succeed, then that's, you know, technically illegal. So, like, there could be intervention, let's say, because Texas always thinks that it can do stuff because, you know, it, I guess they believe at some point that they seceded from the union. Like, I don't know. I don't know why Texas thinks it can get away with so much stuff. But anyways. Yeah.
It's that Wild Bill spirit, man.
That's what they mean by Wild Bill. Wild Bill power hiccup.
Lord. There's Cole in chat. She finally made it.
Yay.
Now we could talk about awesome. Her.
Imagine well, before, getting mail.
Well, I got to say, before any joke comments, we do have to point out one thing, which is that one thing that being rural has done for her is made her insanely resilient. Like, she posted about how she was powering her house with a damn car battery and a converter. I was like, whoa, seriously? Like, it has me going out and buying this stuff now, because I'm like, what if something like this happens? I got nothing here. If my power went out like that, I'd be boned, sitting here rolling around on the floor hoping Stack Electricity would warm my ass up. And she's like, well, don't mind me. It's going to jack in here. And, like, I want to do that now. So she taught me, and now I'm going to replicate and hope for the best, because that was ingenious.
Yeah, we don't have that in Texas either. We don't even know how to drive on snow.
Well, you guys don't get it that often, so.
No, it's true. But I mean, I have no sympathy for the people who, you know, as soon as they get on ice or whatever and they, you know, start to go forward on their car and then it just starts spinning the wheels and the back is going back and forth. Like, their idea is to punch the accelerator.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're like, well, this is how I go faster. Like, it's hard to have sympathy for those people. But, you know, I'm definitely going to be buying a Subaru at some point because, you know, four-wheel drive.
It's the way to go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we had snow again this week up here, too. We had another, like, 5 inches that we had to deal with.
And if it's anything like here, it's already friggin' gone because the sun went crazy.
Oh, no, we still have plenty of it. So, although it did rain today.
I almost feel like that's a lucky thing then, because when snow is not actually negatively impacting my commute, I love it. It's only when I can't do anything because it's all over the damn place. But when it's just creating a nice visual presence, I enjoy that.
Yeah, it was one of those things for me where it was like, oh, it would be so nice to, like, look at snow and, like, go out and stomp around in the snow. And, you know, some people were, like, you know, driving pickups down, like, these streets and, like, riding trash can lids and stuff, you know, dragging behind, like, you know, and I'm like, oh, that's awesome, you know, because you can
I'm a snow Tony Hawk.
Yeah, you can't do that in Texas, so that would have been nice, but it's like, but then you can't go inside and warm up because there's no power, so, you know, just had to, like, you know, look out the window and be like, oh, this is so pretty, and then
look at me, turn I'm around a and, Tony Hawk.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but honestly, yeah, that's got to be the roughest part. I can imagine, well, actually, I'm almost positive that one thing I saw you read was exactly how this played out, but to be unfortunate, like, oh, cool, snow, you go out, you're all playing, and you come, it's like, time to warm up under the heat, and that's when your power goes, like, fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
Carnage in chat says, speaking of Tony Hawk, he wants us to talk about the news. This is not a news episode. This is an odd-numbered episode where we don't discuss news. But
yeah, well,
technically, but we are we'll bring it up anyway. News. There was a crazy storm that took place in Texas.
But we could touch on it quick. Did you guys hear Tony Hawk is hitting some more platforms later on this year?
Wait a minute. That was actually like a nice segue to the news. Yeah, I didn't even know
yeah
that.
There's actual news regarding Tony Hawk. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2 is going to be hitting, where's my news? Xbox Series X and PS5 on March 26th. It will be a $10 upgrade for those who own the game digitally. If you own the digital deluxe, it is a free upgrade. And then the Switch is coming later this year as well.
I can see that. It's a great game. I can see that being a fun portable to have on hand, like, because, you know, just pull it out on the can, do like a 2-minute run or 3-minute run.
They had it on Game Boy Color.
Yeah, and I used to play it, despite it not measuring up to the Dreamcast, but now it will be pretty much on par. So with the console version, because, well, it's the same game. So
I wish they would.
Back in those days.
I hope they have the Game Boy Color version in just like a, you know, hidden away somewhere. The Switch version.
That would be fun. That would be really fun.
Yeah, I kind of miss that kind of stuff, like those, like games that were, I honestly just miss that style of game, Game Boy Color and Game Boy Advance style games. So I do appreciate every once in a while when the game's like, you know what? We miss it too. So we're going to slap a little Easter egg in there. Or
I'm into it.
It's the win. But I don't know. But honestly, I would. I'm not. Well, I didn't have to pay because thankfully we reviewed that one. But I probably would consider buying it for the Switch.
Yeah, I might check it out myself. I kind of missed it the first time around, so be nice.
No, it'll be good. There's no date for the Switch version yet. Just said later on this year.
That's fine. That's when I'm going to be buying Switch games again. So later on this year.
Speaking of Switch games, there are some Switch games we've got to talk about. Should we get into these?
I suppose so.
Another pro segue.
Are we talking about skateboarding or segueing?
Ha.
That's why we missed you. See that? Look at that. That's what I'm here for.
murmuring. All right, are you guys ready to do some reviews until Tim gets here?
Yeah.
Who knows when that's going to be? He's going to show up randomly later on this episode because he's got shit to talk about too.
Yeah, but, I'm looking forward to Purnell's first review here.
Yeah, first game to talk about tonight is called Azure Lane Crosswave, developed by Idea Factory and Compile Heart, published by Idea Factory International. Released February 16th on the Switch for $49.99. Historical battleships come to life to change the tide of battle, control a fleet of cute but devastating characters, and bring any enemy to their knees. Will you be able to sail your fleet to victory, or will you sink into the ocean? Purnell, tell us about this one.
I'm actually curious about what Chris is going to think about what I have to say, because this is going to be...
I would believe anything that you say. Like, I'm going to sign off on whatever good or bad things you have to say about this game, because I bet that I feel the same way.
There's a lot of pornography. He's like, wait a minute, I didn't agree to that.
It wasn't in my version.
I got the clearly the Switch version is the better one. So the best way
there's no pornography in this game. Let's get that out of the way.
That was a joke referencing him saying he'll agree with anything I say.
Idea Factory's going to listen to this and be like, what the hell did we get ourselves?
How did you find the pornography?
You unlock it. The actual game.
Let's just start over. Azure Lane Crosswave.
Oh, God. All right. So the actual game, Azure Lane Crosswave, is essentially a game in a world where a bunch of nations are pretty much exist that are sort of meant to resemble like nations of our actual world. And the residents of those nations, some of them at least, are known as something called a Kanzen, which is essentially a woman fused with a boat. Boat women.
What the fuck?
Yes. Hi, Tim. Boat
Sorry,
girl.
I was trying to be like really quietly, like slip onto the show, and like then that happened. So here I am. Hi. Sorry, I'm late. All right, here we go. Tell me about the boat women.
Seriously, the whole time I've been playing this game, I keep making jokes about girls are boats. I can't help myself. It's just how it is. So these women are also boats. And they kind of have their own sort of like military peace that exists in their world where none of the nations actually intrude on each other. They kind of have like a mutual relationship of understanding. But enemy force called the Sirens show up, causing all sorts of like nonsensical mayhem involving cubes and you know, intruding on various territories, resulting in the nations coming up with an idea, most particularly the soccer nation, comes up with the idea to have a sort of military games, like war games sort of thing, but or military training games. But the side intention is so they can actually all work within each other's respective regions to collectively work against this siren threat. So that is pretty much the layout of the plot, because aside from that, the whole game is the majority of the plot is just girls having an excuse to talk to each other, but they're actually boat girls. So that's the gimmick. So, but what is the actual gameplay like? So, as you play through the game, you are essentially on a world map of sorts, and you control one of your girls. You fly around the map using a dash button or just a regular walk, and you come across a few different things on the map. Treasure chests, which can include like equipment that you can equip on the girls, which I'll get to shortly, and events where you can communicate with either the girls in the different squads and just have nice conversations with them. Because much of this game, I would say the vast majority of this game, is dialogue scenes where the girls are talking to each other, whether it be for narrative, story purpose, or just because they want to talk. And it's kind of cool to chat with your friends and have these dialogues. You know, sundry boat meets, you know, kamikaze boat, whatever. So the last element of the game that can occur, however, is the actual skirmish scenes. And what happens on those is you go in and you get to choose from a roster of starting out fairly small, like three or so boats. But over time, you get up to about 50 character boats and then a roster of support boats as well. Character boats being ones that you start with, but then later on, as you earn rewards from battles, you can purchase new girls to use in your groups. Then, once you've chosen your team, you go onto the battlefield. And it's basically like a large like arena of sorts, usually for stage, usually just like a large open space. And the game will say, defeat X number of enemies or defeat this specific target. Sometimes it's another boat girl or boat girls. Other times it's just like a giant U-boat or something. You got to like sink the boats. But essentially you got to pretty much fulfill the mission statement as it is. You have three different fire buttons that you have. You have your primary weapon, your secondary weapon, and your lock-on attack, and then your special skill button. And they're all based, well, aside from your special skill button, but they're all based around what you can find and equip. Usually you get equipment from winning battles in a quick, timely manner as rewards, or finding them on the map. And then lastly, you can also get them from purchasing them in a shop that unlocks later in the game. So you pretty much go through these battles. And to be quite frank, how I mentioned earlier about how the battles are the conversations of the majority of the game, well, that's 100% true, because in addition to the fact that you have more conversation events than actual battle events, the battles themselves are also meant to be very short. Short being that a lot of most of the missions, if anything, have a potential, like, you know, reward goal of beating them within 2 minutes. So they intend for you to be able to beat these levels very quickly. You can grind out battles to get better loot and things of that nature. So you can always go back and do it over and over again. But for the most part, battles are quick. Dialogue scenes, not so quick unless you skip them. But then I don't know what you.
What's
you
the point of skipping them? Yeah.
I was about to say, you shouldn't play this if you're intending to skip the actual dialogue. That is pretty much the purpose of the game.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I will say, having played through the entire game and all the DLC, you actually really do get attached to these characters, even though all they're doing is standing on one side of the screen and talking to each other.
Oh, yeah. And there's also just something kind of funny about the fact that, again, there are girls who are also destroyers, because they have classes, by the way. Destroyers, aircraft carriers, battleships. So, but they're all just like walking around in buildings and on islands.
And occasionally on boats, and that blows my mind.
Boat girls on boats. It's just so, it's almost like the guys who came up with the concept weren't like, you know, they're boat girls, but they're just like you and me. They're normal. They're normal sized girls. Don't judge them. Hell, one of the girls is damn near a complete super battleship. She takes the whole screen by her damn self. And yet she also is just walking through doors like it's nothing. I don't freaking know. But I agree with what Chris said, though. Like, at first you kind of, you, as you play the game and you're not really attached to anybody yet, you're just kind of like, oh, here we go. Here are the traits, the stereotypical. Here's the sundry girl. Here's the naive girl who wants to be friends with everybody. But as you play the game and you engage the dialogue, and you start to end up starting to have favorites. You end up having the characters that you like versus the characters you dislike. You end up having the characters you want to have in your unit versus the ones you don't. Now, that isn't to say that you're going to be forced to switch, you know, characters constantly to have the proper build, because really, you could play this game and not really change out at all. It's just about having fun. But the joy of the game comes from picking characters and actually picking optimal equipment for them, and then being like, okay, I like this set of characters better than this set, especially because they all have their own little special skills too that are unique to them. So if you get really into the game and the battle sequences, you'll find yourself going, I have this optimal super build team here, and you might find yourself being settled on the one because of how awesome they are, and that's kind of cool. You can also even just not so much just acquire gear, but you can also improve the gear you've got. So there's a shop that allows you, not a shop, but more of a facility that allows you to spend money and resources to improve the equipment that you get so that you can take one gun and make it a better gun. So even if you find yourself not wanting to deal with the mixing and matching of all the gear and whatnot, at least until the game decides to put some walls up for you, you can probably just go a little lazy and say, I'm just going to spend some money here, upgrade this gun, and just keep at it until the game outright forces you to switch it up a bit. There's nothing wrong with that. So really, the game itself, to me, I'd call it a guilty pleasure, if anything, because again, you really are just kind of going up to different event sequences, watching and, or rather listening to and reading the conversation. And every once in a while, you get a skirmish going on too. But it's the interactions that really make the game, and actually the communication and seeing how the characters interact with each other. And if you get really into customization later on, that's all good too. But for me, for the most part, ended up becoming more about, I just want to hear them talk and stuff. I'm kind of cool with that. For the most part, as far as the content goes, I would say that the content is there if you are interested in what you are getting. It even comes with a few bonus episodes right out the gate. So they're not even like the primary narratives. They're just like, hey, you want to go hang out and see what this girl's doing on her side missions? You can do that. And there's also DLC for additional missions like that too, or storylines like that, if you want more of them, that delve into like the individual characters as opposed to just the overall narrative.
Which, Chris, but, you enjoyed the DLC, right?
Yeah, I thought it was good.
Oh, yeah. So like, and that's the thing, like if you get through the game and you're like, I'm enjoying this, or hell, even if you're like, hey, I like this character a lot, and you just realize, oh, wait a minute, she actually has a DLC. You might just say, screw them, buy the DLC now and just play the game's, that character's narrative just because you like them enough to do so, which is totally cool. But for the most part, you don't even have to do that because there's plenty of gaming here, even prior to the DLC stuff. It's just, again, a matter of if you enjoy the girls' narratives and them interacting with each other, because again, that to me, even though they don't describe it that way per se, that is the majority of the game's appeal. Yeah. And for the time you're putting into it, which is fun. I mean, it is an Idea Factory / Compile Heart game. A lot of their games have that appeal. So this is not a shocker. So ultimately, I would say this is a buy it if you're an Idea fan, Idea Factory Compile Heart fan. Try it if you are surprisingly somehow not familiar with them yet, but you like the idea of girls as boats. If you play a lot of, what's that board game, card game company, Japanime Games. If you play like El Alamein and you're like, hey, I like girls as Panzer tanks, maybe I like girls as boats too. Well, in this game, they're boats and they talk. They don't talk in El Alamein. So here you go. This is just better. So just pick it up there too. So, in the end, I think this is a solid product. It's worth your time if you're down that, if you're already in that cusp of things, because I already know I am. I've been playing Idea Factory junk for years now. So this is no surprise to me that I would like it. It's just a matter of, I think you would too. What did you think about overall, Chris, as far as like any of the stuff I said there?
Oh, yeah, the same. I really liked it. I didn't know that I would like it as much as I did because it's not an RPG. But I mean, apart from the fact that like the action really is like copy and paste, you know, up until like the final battles and such, like those actually do get really pretty interesting. I did find myself like kind of drawn into a world of girls who are also boats. And of course, it's It's great to get a reaction out of people when you tell them what you're playing.
Yeah, like Tim.
my question, and you might have said it already, but I don't. If you did, I didn't catch it. But what did you think of the actual like performance of it on the Switch? Did it like slow down a lot or anything?
Honestly, for me, I didn't get a ton of slowdown or anything like that, though I almost would have expected it to. But at the same time, it wasn't very resource heavy either, which is something that probably factored into it not being a big drain on it, which is good.
Okay, that's good, because I'm thinking about buying it on Switch, and I have it on Steam, and my computer runs it great. But like, that's the problem that I didn't realize when I reviewed it, but like when I played Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force, when I played the PS4 version, I was like, oh, the Switch version is really sloggy, like versus the a higher powered system. So I was kind of wondering if that was the same case here. So that's good.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that then in that regard, simply because, like you said, you didn't experience that. But in the event that it was like, oof, not expecting it, because in a game I'll bring up later in my review cycle, sometimes that can be deceiving. So I'm glad to hear that that was not the case here, if you were concerned about it.
Okay, yeah. No, I think Azur Lane's great.
Cool, so I'm even
watching
it.
The anime.
Tim, are you still confused about female tanks and female battleships coming to life and all that stuff?
Anything is possible in the world of anime.
Also, I just reminded me, I didn't think about saying one more thing.
Oop. No, nobody cares. Go on, Perel.
we care. is the fact that all the girls are based off of actual boats, named after actual boats. So if you're the type that's like, we'll see a girl's like, ooh, that's a sexy boat. You could also Google the real boat and learn about where the sexy boat comes from.
Okay, so if you Google Azur Lane, as someone might have done when they started hearing about this game about 10 minutes ago, you know how they have the people may also ask, pulls up popular questions. Top question: can you marry an Azur Lane?
The answer is yes.
And the answer is yes. First, prepare for marriage. Go to the dockyard and check the affection stats of the ship you want to marry.
Yeah. That is actually an aspect of the game that's fairly hidden, but it's like, it's there. You can make these boats marry each other.
There is nothing in game supporting this. This is not a game about ship men. It's about ship ladies.
Ship them ships.
Exactly.
Ship all the ships. Oh my God. That's what I'm all about. See, this, welcome, Tim. Well, you know, he's like, we don't care about
what is this PC nonsense. Like,
but now I do want, before I guess I got to do my thing before the getting caught up with how you're doing. But I, like I said, I would give this a buy or a try it in the event that you are like somehow unfamiliar with Idea Factory, but are intrigued by the idea of like boat girls.
I thought we did that already.
We probably did, but I kind of forgot for a second because this has been a rather hysterical concept of a review. This, you can marry your favorite boat.
So, Tim, how are you doing?
Oh, it was on. This is okay. You know, I thought I'd heard of this game before. It's been out for like a few years, like on.
Well, the phones? Original mobile game.
Yeah, the original mobile game. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Crosswave is a whole different thing. Well, it's like a.
Sure. But I mean, the franchise, the cinematic universe of boat girls. There's a cosplayer of a boat girl. Yeah. Very good. I don't know. I'm fine. I'm really fucking tired.
All right. Let's move on then. We have more games. There's a lot of games to talk about tonight. There are so many games to talk about. So the next one to talk about is called Natsuki Chronicles, developed by Cute Corporation, published by Rising Star Games, released February 17th on PS4 and PC for $19.99. New dramatic horizontal shoot 'em up that takes place in the same setting as Jinja Force, an immersive story that follows protagonist Natsuki discover the story of her past as a rookie pilot up to present day with events that are parallel to those in Jinja Force. Tim, tell us about Natsuki Chronicles.
Well, it's a shooter with no boat girls. Who gives a fuck, right? I mean, geez, how do you follow that up? Jesus Christ. No boat girls. 0 out of 10. No.
You cannot marry this ship.
You can't. Maybe you can. Or ship. I don't know. I didn't make it quite to the end of the story, so who knows what happens? You know, we can leave it an open question. Yeah, Natsuki Chronicles. It's you're not a boat. Okay, there's none of that nonsense. So you got a bit more of a straightforward shooter, scrolling shooter going on here. At least in as much as you're not a boat girl. let's ground ourselves a little bit more after going on that flight of fantasy. So yeah, you are, it's a scrolling shooter. Looks really nice, really, really nice, clean graphics, good frame rate. Just all the art is like really sharp looking. It's polygonal, not sprite based, or not hand drawn or what have you. But it all just looks like really nice, really slick, kind of like a pale color palette to it. And I dig it. And, you know, I don't know if there's any dramatic difference between the PS4 and PS5 version. The PS5 version, you know, runs really nice, really good, nice frame rate to it, which is, you know, nice and welcome. So your ship, you have a primary fire, a secondary fire, and a shield button. No bombs, which is fucking weird. But you got these other things, and kind of what makes the game stand out. So there is, I'll get to it, but the main course here is the story mode, which has you following the said story of non-boat girl Natsuki, as she is a rookie pilot, and is unfortunately really hard to follow because it's not dubbed. There are subtitles, but they're up there in the upper right corner. So you're playing through a stage and like characters are talking and you can't read that. You can't read that. You're too busy shooting. Mm-hmm.
I got a few shooter games that are like that.
So that's kind of a bummer. Like you do get like the intro to the level. So you get the basic premise of like why you are going to this level and like what you're doing there. But the dialogue within the level is completely lost. Unfortunately, pretty much. There's just too much going on. It's not even like there's like down. I feel like, you know, in another, what was the game? Cinemora, like a lot of the dialogue would be in moments where the screen is not filled with shit. So you could actually read it real quick. And this is not the case. Like they're just talking like, and you can't follow it. So that's unfortunate. But actually progressing through the story is a lot of fun. There's a really nice progression system to it where you're earning credits, whether you clear or whether you fail a stage, regardless, which you can use to upgrade your ship and equip it with different weapons. So you have those, you know, your primary, secondary, and your shield. So you can purchase different weapons. You know, it's like, oh, here's my your kind of bog standard scrolling shooter spread shot kind of deal. Like, here's your stronger laser. Here's your laser that does another weird thing. Here's like a wider wave beam that's like somewhere in between the strength and spread of the other two. You get different like missile configurations. You know, you can equip a back shot to your secondary fire, which is cool. Just like all kinds of neat stuff. And the way that your primary and secondary fire interplay, like they kind of play off the same like amount of like ship power, quote unquote. So like if you're just holding down primary fire, like that shot is bigger, larger, more effective. But if you then hold down secondary fire at the same time, it will reduce the power of your primary fire and give you kind of like a half power secondary fire. So if your secondary fire is meant to shoot out two missiles, like one up, one down, then it will only shoot out one missile, one down. But then you release primary fire and you get your full power secondary fire to shoot missiles in both directions. So it gives you a cool thing to do while you're flying around. You're not just holding down buttons and trying to weave around enemy shots. You're managing how you want to utilize your two weapons in concert with one another. You know, obviously, like the rear shot, it can be very effective because sometimes enemies come at you from behind. But, you know, missiles are also good because enemies will be below or above you. So you can think carefully before entering a level, or you can go into the level and die and be like, oh, I need missiles, or I need a backshot, or I need more forward firepower, as it were. And then you have your shields, which work off their own enemy meters. So they are basically like two little satellites that will hang out around your ship, like one above, one below. And then depending on what kind of configuration you have, when you hold down the your trigger, either they'll, like the most basic one is like, oh, they make a little barrier right in front of you that will block shots and ships from damaging you. But, you know, then there's another one where it's just like they will hang out like right on top and below you to block shots coming from those. There's the more expensive ones will rotate around you so that they can just block things from a 360 coming at you from all directions. So some stages you might need one, some stages you might need another. And yeah, all playing through this story, you're getting more currency to buy more stuff and upgrade those weapons. And that's cool and fun to do because whether you win or lose on a stage, it's giving you plenty of money to buy shit, which is good. And as you play through these stages, like it is leveling up your character. And also each stage kind of has its own, I'll say like difficulty net to it, because the more you play a stage, even if you keep failing, if you're just bashing your head against the stage, it's just too hard. It gives you more hits to your shields. So at base level, you have a shield system. So you have a health bar, which regenerates, which is incredible for a fucking space shooter game. Because usually it's like one hit dead. Sorry. You know?
Yeah.
But instead, this game has like a whole meter. So you can take some hits and it actually regenerates on its own over time, which is incredible. Like I can't think of another space shooter that did something like this. It just adds, you know, a different level of playability to it and lets the game be a bit more savage towards you, you know, without being a dick. It's like, OK, well, we can shoot some really fast enemies or shots or horrible patterns at you and you'll probably survive. To make it a bit further in the level, which is much appreciated. But when you die on a level, it will give you like one more section of shield that can, so basically you can take a few more hits before it even starts affecting your regenerating shield, which is cool. So eventually you will just power your way through the goddamn level. Or you could just bump it down to easy and then just cakewalk your way through it. The game does not judge
you. That's what I would do.
And I won't judge you either, but it is easy on easy. And normal is kind of hard. It's a little abnormal. So there's all that going on. Like, I think enemy shots are pretty easy to track. They even do a thing where they will draw a line that the shot is going to take before it even comes at you. So you can get an idea of where you need to position your ship. So that's cool. That's fun. That's great. Aside from that, there's also an arcade mode, which kind of strips out the whole ship progression thing. And then enemies will just drop power ups at you, which I don't recommend jumping into arcade mode because you won't recognize what any of those icons are and you won't understand what's going on. It's much better to play like at least a little bit of story mode before you go into arcade mode and start like, what are these? There's so many different weapons I can have. I don't understand, but that's cool. It strips out all the story. You just play through levels, shoot things. I mean, it's the same levels. It's just with all that context, like stripped out of it. Yeah. So there's that for a more straightforward score chasing experience. Once you've, exhausted the story mode, you know, has some online leaderboard replay upload shit, which whenever one of these games is like, do you want to upload your replay? And I'm like, no, you did you see what I just did?
Nobody wants to watch.
Nobody wants to watch that. It is not something spectacular to see. And I also think the music is pretty good. Some good shooter jams in there.
Nice. It sounds like a good package. So $20. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's definitely a buy. Like I've reviewed like quite a number of scrolling shooters for the show over the years, and this might be my favorite.
Nice.
That I've played. Yeah. Usually it's kind of like, oh yeah, you know, all shooters are fun if you're into that shit, but this is like legitimately got some really cool stuff going on, and is a heck of a lot of fun to play and engage with.
And it's good to see it on more platforms, too. It's been on Xbox for a while, so it's good to see it hit PlayStation and PC.
I didn't know things could be just on Xbox. That's weird.
Yeah, isn't that fucking crazy? It was on Xbox for a while. Yeah. All right. Next game to talk about is Anodyne 2 Return to Dust, developed by Analgesic Productions, published by Rattlesnake Games, released February 18th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $19.99. Anodyne 2 Return to Dust combines the thrilling scale and cinematic storytelling of 3D games with the tight design and easy to pick up satisfaction of 2D action adventures explore gorgeous and haunting locales, speak with strangers, and make both friends and memories along the way. Tim, you covered this one a while back. It's hitting consoles. How is it?
It's still fantastic. I liked this game quite a bit when it first hit PC a couple years ago. Really enjoyed it. So now it's coming to everything else, so the masses could have their chance at enjoying Anodyne. I should say, like, it's a game that I've only my affection for it has nothing but risen in the intervening time since last I touched upon it. It is a, so you look at this game and you might be like, oh, that's a style. It is taking the style of, you know, 3D of like early ish 3D. Yeah. Like think like PS1 N64 era, like 3D platformer, exploration adventure type game. So you don't have like high polygon count characters. You don't have really eye popping textures. Like the whole color palette of the world is pretty muted. It's really interesting looking. So yeah, it's not trying to be a looker on the level of your modern AAA 3D extravaganzas. It is shooting for, you know, the feel of an era. In the original game, was kind of aping, or Anodyne 1, it was kind of was a overhead adventure, like in the likes of original Zelda or Link to the Past, especially. So this transitions to being more of a 3D exploration type game. So you are, you know, Return to Dust. You are the cleaner, this dust cleaner. You are brought to life. You have to collect some egg yolks to break out of your egg. That's what you do. This game is also fucking weird, by the way. It's also just really wonderfully strange. So you get into the world. And you are, you know, prescribed the task. You have to go around and clean up dust and collect things, help people out to try to fill this giant device in the middle of town with dust to finish the game or accomplish your task and finish the game. And there's kind of some different things you can do at the ending, but we don't need to get into all that and what goes on there. So you walk around, you can turn into a car to move faster, which is great at will, just right off the bat. You can turn into a car. Why? I don't know. Does it matter? No. Does not. You can double jump right off the bat. Always appreciate it. I think it gives you like pretty much your entire skill set right off the bat in this game. Like there's the only thing that gates your progress is the wall of dust that is around the city. So as you fill up more of that device in the middle, it pushes it further and further out. But there isn't like any, you know, you have to find the wah hook shot in order to get across this chasm or whatever. There's none of that shit. Like you can like the areas that are available to you, you can explore at will. Water.
Can you explore water?
You can do some exploration of water. Not a lot of it. It's a very dusty world out there, I will say. So you can find people around town and around the world. Not always. People might be a stretch of a fucking word. like weird creature. I mean, one of the first guys you run into is like this giant, like meaty mouth creature who is at the soup, what appears to be a supermarket, and who ate too much food and can't stop eating. And you hop up to him and he has a problem. And what you do is you zap him with your little, I don't remember what the heck it's called. And you will basically shrink down into nano size. You will go inside their brain to clean the dust out to try to fix their problem. And at that point, Anodyne 2 becomes much more like Anodyne 1 in that you are suddenly in a, two-dimensional sprite-based overhead perspective and kind of a, you know, little dungeon puzzle solve-y sort of deal. I guess these are the quote-unquote dungeons of the game if you're going with a full Zelda analogy. But yeah, you'll have to solve some puzzles, hit some switches, find some keys, beat some enemies, and then find your way through the said person's brain to clean out the dust and help them feel better. And help them out. And just like a lot, the character, there's just like a ton of really interesting characters, and the writing in this game is so, you know, very strong and heartfelt, and the game, you know, I just said heart, but it has a ton of heart to it, just with the characters and the world and the interactions and the writing. And it's a lot of fun to explore and find these strange characters in these strange places. And just like none of it, you know, makes sense. It's all very bizarre, but it all comes together, you know, in its own kind of weirdo coherent way. But the game, not to give away too much, but like the more you play, like it's not a predictable cycle of what happens. It's not like, okay, you will keep switching, you know, shrinking down to nano size, but the game has ways of surprising you, a lot. Like it doesn't get repetitive. It finds new twists on, it, you know, what it has you doing in the dungeons. And you kind of never know what you're gonna find. And some of the stuff like later on in the game is real crazy and tons of fun and will catch you off guard. And I will just keep it to myself because it's fun to explore for yourself and see what this game has to offer. It has a ton of accessibility options. Like you can just straight up just make your character invincible if you don't want to fucking die to damage. Because you know,
and there's no penalty for that either.
Yeah, there's no penalty for that. The whole point is to be able to play through the game the way you want to play it, see the story, enjoy the world, enjoy the characters, enjoy the gameplay, and have a good time. Did I infer that Purnell also got to play this game?
Yes, Purnell, what were your thoughts on it?
Honestly, I'm even playing it right the heck now, but it's such a it's a strange ass game. But I think the thing that appeals to me the most, being an old ass man, is the fact that it gives me feelings of, or recollections of, like Zelda the Minish Cap. And with the whole, like, you know, shrinking down to going to different like sub environments. But also it just makes me think of, like, I guess, like, I was having trouble deciding if I want to say a PS2 or PS1 3D game, but I'm going to go with late era 3D PS1 game.
Yeah.
I would go with early era PS1. Like this is definitely a PS1 game and not a PS5 game.
Visually. Oh, yeah. God. Yeah. Someone came in and was like, the graphics on this suck. I'm like, well, honestly, it wasn't made for you in mind then, because I'm pretty sure they had a specific motif in play here and they pulled that off. And I'm happy for it, because it's one thing if they were like, this is really the best we could do, guys. I mean, we boasted the best graphics. This is the best we could do. But they clearly know there's a market for retro style games and the retro graphic style. So long as you pull it off and do it right and it's not janky, which this game is not, it's actually endearing and appreciated as opposed to being a shortcut. Yeah, and I appreciate that here.
Specifically trying to hit on, you know, obviously, you know, people do pixel art like NES looking games all the time. And that's this whole thing. I think it's a much more difficult needle to thread with trying to make early 3D, because that stuff is just so blocky. And the fact, like, this game, you know, there's a little bit of fuzz around the edges of the characters. You know, it was funny firing this up on PS5. I'm like, oh, I wonder if they sharpened that up. And no, they didn't. And of course they wouldn't. That's not the fucking point. I played it on a powerful PC 2 years ago. If it was meant to look sharp, it would have looked sharp. It's not the point. That's not what it's about. No, it's going for a look and a feel. And yeah, it's not an accident.
And I love it for that. So honestly, and the way you just described it, I like the idea that I'm going to be coming up on some wacky-er things later. I love the idea of the card, too, by the way. I'm usually not a fan of when you get all of your abilities from the very beginning of the game. That's what hit me with Breath of the Wild a lot. But at the same but at the same time, if the gameplay is engaging enough, mm-hmm. and they still keep hitting you with like new twists so that you don't find yourself becoming bored with how the game flows, then that works out fine. But a lot of games, when they do, it's like, okay, you can do these three things, that's all you can do, and we make the loop never non-changing. Like, that's a little different.
Yeah, but they don't build out from that. Yeah. Cards. That's what you're picking up. God damn it. it's been a long week and it's been 2 days. Yeah. So it's definitely something I recommend pretty highly. I mean, the campaign is about, I'm trying to think, because the clock keeps ticking when you're paused, which messes up my count. But it's, I don't know, probably 7 hours on the low end, 12 hours on the high end, somewhere in there. Like, it's a decent campaign.
Yeah, we should point out this is not your traditional Rattalaika title where you could fire it up and get all the achievements in 20 minutes. This is a full game with achievements that go the entire way.
Yes.
And you actually got to earn them in this one. Like, this is a legit, this isn't like a $5 pixel art platformer. This is a legit $20 game. So I want to know, $20 on it, what is your verdict?
Yes. Everyone should buy it. Everyone needs to play this game. Like, it's very accessible and playable and, like, it's just, I feel like the look is the only thing that would turn people off, and it shouldn't. Like, it's just so interesting, and like, the art is so cool to look at, and the characters are so weird. It's just fantastic. And I love the way that they render, like, when you push back the first wall of dust, like right outside the city, there's a car wash, and it's just like an interesting, like, minimalist polygonal interpretation of a car wash. It's just really neat to see stuff like that and kind of like figure out what it was or what it is or what it is meant to represent, you know? Bit abstract.
Arnell, your thoughts?
Honestly, I'm pretty interested in the idea of the game too. Like, I just, again, well, I'm going to go with at least a try it for now, but Tim's enthusiasm has me feeling even more enthusiastic about it than I already felt. So, and just the fact that if you ever played a game that has characters, and whenever you talk to them, like, it's not that generic, like, hi, welcome to my town. This place is nice. The soda shop's over there or whatever. Really. But everybody says something that kind of leaves you going, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, that's the vibe I get in this game in a good way. Like, I like the fact that all the characters have very odd things to say, which makes me want to talk to them.
Yeah.
It's a good game. I'm going to go with a strong try it, but mostly the try it is mainly because of the whole, it may not be your style of, like, graphics, but for me, it hits the bill quite nicely, so I don't care.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. You need to finish it for now. Don't let it fall by the wayside. Well, you can get through it.
Honestly, let's be real here. I'm hitting a bit of a high right now. Like, I'm beating games and I kind of like that. So that may continue.
Since Cole's not here, I'm going to put a placeholder Ori here.
See, Cole, we do love you. We acknowledge your presence. I think the idea is I just got to make a list of titles and adhere to them, because that's what happened this month. Just to throw it out
February,
there.
Real quick, man.
For February.
Cole approves, like, in chat.
Yeah.
What a good bean.
It was like, it's a four in February. How do I do this? And I was like, okay, the only way I can really do it is I need to actually plan ahead. Like, what am I going to play? And then actually stick to the goal. And I already had people like, you got to go back to play more than such and such, these like 40-hour games. Like, how about you fuck off? I'm trying to concentrate here. This shit ain't easy for me. I'm ADHD like a mofo. I need to concentrate. So I focused on four specific games, and I beat one per weekend. And I'm up to the last game on the final weekend of February. It's going to be on Mori. And then I can be like, okay, time to move on and keep this train rolling. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually finished my four for February this past weekend. So now I'm just in, like, bonus territory if I can knock out something else. Bonus
territory.
Yeah. Four in February EX.
Yeah. Yeah, just fill it in.
Despite having an entire week off of work, I think that I'm not going to make it. Even though I picked four Switch games, and I had my Switch on me this whole last week of just sitting around playing Switch.
I love how I was about to say, you got an excuse, you know, Texas and everything, but then fucking you're like, no, yeah, Switch. That wasn't the problem. I just didn't play the games I should have been playing for 4th February.
I mean, I did. I got through two of them, but I don't think I'm going to get through the remaining two in the next 7 days.
5 days.
Yeah, 5 days, right. It's February.
Yeah.
You got to split the load. get your girlfriend to play one of the games. You play the other, and then when she gets to the end, she just has to put the controller down and say, here are the controls. And you just go, you punch the last boss in the face, and like, I did it!
See, by my rule, I don't have to finish the game. I just have to never want to play it again.
Oh, okay.
That is a reasonable rule, I would say. But well, I would say by the same token, though, that you're like, hey, I beat one stage and I never want to play it again. That feels like it's less about I completed it, and more like, that's a badass. Well, like, that's a terrible game.
So I guess we're going off in this tangent. So it's like I picked. Well, it's like I was going to. Well, OK, so the one that the two that I didn't finish is I didn't finish Yooka-Laylee and the Impossible Lair. But I got to the Impossible Lair and I played it a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I just don't want to grind myself through this to finish it. But I've seen, you know, pretty much the entire game, you know, and I feel good about it. And the other that I didn't finish is Harmony of Dissonance, which I played for a few hours, and I just don't like that game. I don't want to force myself through it.
I appreciate that statement, because back when it came out, I had that problem where I was like, I'm not sure how I feel about this game. And I tried to replay it like maybe like a year or two ago, because somebody on the show was like, you would love this game. You should try it again. It's my favorite. I'm like, still not that good.
It's very stiff, and like, it feels like it stands out only because they really went out of their way to make the graphics pop on a non-backlit Game Boy Advance.
But he literally made the hero glowing.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But, you know, I pulled that game off of my shelf, like out of storage, and put it into a Game Boy Advance and played it. So in the spirit of 4th February, you know, I got something out of my backlog, gave it some time. It just turned out the end of it. Which, not even the end of it, but the end of my time with it, I was just like, but I did actually finish The Room, that game, which originated on iOS like, I don't know, 10 years ago at this point. It feels like it probably wasn't that long, but I played it on Switch, and that's only a few hours long, and I enjoyed that. It's a little puzzle game, puzzle box puzzle game. And I finished Spiritfarer, which was my alternate, but I played that whole game, and that game is awesome. Holy shit. Yeah, that game, it's so good. It will make you cry like a fucking bitch. But
because it's hard, or cry because of the narrative?
The narrative, like, it tugs on the heartstrings. And if you're not familiar with the game, it's from the same people that made Sundered, which I reviewed on here like a few years ago and did not like at all. Yeah, good job on making a game that's awesome. So, like, you are the you are the Spiritfarer for the dead. You have a boat. It is a management slash like kind of adventure game. So you have your boat. You pick up spirits. You fulfill quests and tasks for them. You talk to them about their lives, and then, you know, at a certain point, you have to take them. They are done. They are done. They are ready to go. And then you have to take them to the Everdoor so they can move on to the next whatever's next. And those scenes are just heartbreaking. Like, oh. But the game has incredible art and amazing music and great writing, especially for like the main, you know, the main characters you have on your boat. And behind that, like, the management sim part of it is a lot of fun. And it's just like, oh, it's so good. It made there was a lot of tears when we had to take people to the Everdoor in this house.
Well, then $29.99 on Spiritfarer. What do you think?
It's on Game Pass. But yeah, you should buy it. Anyways, yeah, that's my
knocking them out.
Just throwing games in that we weren't even covering. But Tim, you do have one more game to cover. We should probably get to that.
Yes.
Called Cathedral, developed by Decemberborn, published by Elden Pixels, released February 18th on Switch for $14.99. Wake up in a world with no recollection of how you got there, a world full of secrets, hidden rooms, dungeons, and towns. Cathedral features a vast world meant for exploring. Tim, tell us about Cathedral.
Oh, man.
And Elden Pixels, I'm interested.
Cathedral is pretty cool. It has a very, like, old school feel to me about it, and not just in the fact that it's, oh, hey, remember how we were talking about people making like pixel art games? Hi, how you doing? That's so it's aping, you know, a classic, you know, early 90s, late 80s style of graphics with its sprites and its character. You are a knight. You are dropped into the eponymous cathedral. It is kind of like a Metroidvania-ish type deal. It doesn't specifically follow those tropes to me. Like, I can remember a time when, Castlevania 2, it reminds me more of that, where it's just like a bit more open, though not like garbage. that kind of early style when it wasn't so like nailed in stone as to like, this is how you go through these games, you know? It's a bit more open and mysterious and hidden, and you don't know exactly where you need to go, which can be A plus and also A minus at the same time. And so you're dropped into this, you know, the cathedral, and you just start exploring your way around, poking around at the edges, trying to find your way through. Eventually you can start finding your way out of the cathedral into like some icy place where you are not supposed to go yet. Your initial time in the cathedral, like the first, I don't know, hour plus or so, however long it takes you to find your way to this certain point, is you'll fight a boss, and you will fall very, very far, and you eventually end up in a town. And that town acts as like your proper hub for the game as you go off on your adventure. And you will start picking up some quests. It'll be like, oh, hey, go into this forest, look for this thing. There's a sword hidden somewhere in the forest. And you're like, oh, shit, a sword, a better sword. That'll make my life easier. Other secrets to find. It'll start kind of pointing you in different directions to start moving out from the town and exploring the world proper. So your dude, as you start off, you can just swing your sword at things and you have three hearts and that's your life. Enemies will drop hearts for you. They will drop gold for you. And you set out starting to explore the world. And as you explore, you start to find more power-ups and items and shit. You will find a crossbow thing that attaches to your hand early on. So you can start shooting some arrows around, which are limited use, and enemies don't drop arrows nearly enough for my taste, because there's some spots where you really need them. So you can use arrows to shoot enemies from far away. You can use them, more importantly, to shoot switches from far away. Your arrows travel through walls for reasons that are not explained, but they do it and they need to hit switches. So it's useful and we'll just go with it. You pick up a shield early on so that you can block enemy projectiles and attacks. You start picking up magic spells that let you do other things. You have a down stab right off the bat, which, kind of right off the way starts to make the game feel very Shovel Knight-y, even though Shovel Knight-y is, borrowing down stabs and pogos from DuckTales and Zelda 2. But I digress. So you got that. You can pogo bounce on enemies with your down stab, slash at them with your sword, block things with your shield, and then shoot arrows. And that's the kind of stuff you have going on. And then picking up magic spells that will let you do other things and solve other puzzles environmental in the world. Water. Don't fall in water. It'll kill you in this game. There's like checkpoints scattered around, so you cross a checkpoint and that's where you will respawn if you die. Kind of like my big beef with the game, there's only one real big beef that I have, but it's substantial enough. So when you die, you lose 10% of your gold. You just lose it. You don't drop it. You fucking lose it. Which is a real pain in the ass, because this game is a real pain in the ass. It is out to get you. In its like spikes will hurt your ass pretty bad. Like, you can wander into areas where enemies will just kill you dead in one hit. Like, even if you have full hearts, you'll get more heart containers, so you'll get more life. If you just take a wrong turn, it's like, it's a new area. Okay. And then it's just like you touch an enemy and you are dead. Just dead. And it's just like, oh, okay, well, there goes 10% of my gold. And everything is dropping gold. But, eventually, as I found, trying to just exploring areas that are a bit more difficult, like, that adds up quite a bit. And when you need that gold and in decent amounts in order to buy certain upgrades from the shop in the town. Like, it's a real bummer. I think the game would have benefited a lot from doing just borrowing from Souls or Shovel Knight. And just like, when you die, like, you just drop your money there and then you can go back and get it, you know, get that money back. But it's just gone forever. And so eventually, unless you're like really, really careful, like, your gold supply just like kind of whittles away. It's like, so, you know, you get into a position where it's like, well, I have it, so I better spend it to get better things. But it's like, when you're trying to save up for like pricier, you know, items like armor to really boost your character and start making more substantial progress, it's kind of a pain in the ass, I found. Maybe this is me. Maybe I'm just bad. I always wonder that when I'm like having trouble with a game. I'm like, maybe I'm just bad. But that kind of like ended up being the thing that put a stick in the craw of my enjoyment quite a bit, unfortunately. I really enjoy like the I think the platforming feels good. I think your jump feels good. I think the way your slash of your sword, like the basic kind of jumping around and killing things, like, feels decent enough, and pogoing on things is always a fun thing to do. I like the idea of the map you have in the game is not like hyper accurate. It's a little bit more vague, which can be good and bad sometimes, depending on, you know, when you're just the blocks that represent the rooms tend to be, or the areas tend to be a bit larger than they need to be. So it's tough to tell exactly where you are in a room and need to get out of. But that's, you know, I don't think that's a dumb choice. It's more of like a stylistic choice with the gameplay. So you don't know, you know, precisely exactly where you are. And I think that's a fine thing to do and is enjoyable. To kind of obfuscate some of that information, but just kind of the level of challenge and the punishment for dying don't always line up well for me.
Well, with that gripe in mind, $15 on Cathedral, what are you thinking?
I think it's worth a try. It has a lot going for it, and like just a couple things that hold it back. I think players that are more looking for that kind of a challenge will get more out of it. If you're
just sold to me,
there you go. Go for it. If you're looking for a more casual experience, which I guess is me, I'm a filthy casual. I need to take a bath and wash this filth of casualness off of me.
Water.
Then it might not be the Metroidvania you're looking for.
All right. Sounds good. That is it for you, Tim.
Is it for me? Yeah, I reviewed 4 games accidentally.
Yeah, I'm about to do that on purpose.
Thunder Lotus got a freebie with Spiritfarer in there.
Yeah. Enjoy. It's so fucking good. It's so good. Don't overlook it. And like, part of my thing is I realize I need to start actually playing the games that are on Game Pass and not just sitting there pretending they're going to be there forever, you know? like, I need to play them if I want to check them out, or at least figure out if they are worth me spending money on at a later date. So I'm trying to do that because I missed some games over the past few months with them leaving before I got the chance to actually play them. So I'm trying to be a bit more aggressive on there. And it came out, I think, last August, launched directly onto Game Pass. So, you know, don't sleep on the stuff that's on Game Pass. It passes away. It goes through the Everdoor eventually. You know, yep,
nothing stays there forever.
Well,
maybe some Microsoft game.
No, that stuff will probably stay there forever. Yeah, like, use your brain, people. Come on. Jesus fucking Christ. Can't do everything for you.
Cole saying it's about time you fuckers put in some work around here.
Just tell it like it is.
Oh, man. All right. Well, we got to move on. Tim, we'll let you get going.
Good night. Yeah,
you ninja jumped in, and now you'll just ninja jump out.
Yeah, I'll ninja jump back out and start working on my 3 reviews for next week.
Oops, ninja jump.
Yeah.
Do you have any final words, Tim?
I'll leave how I came in, which was saying, "What the fuck,
girls on boats."
Oh my god, y'all are crazy. Gotta give a shout out to Root Beer's My Jam, who subbed a little earlier for 22nd month. 22 months. That is ridiculous. Thank you so much, Root Beer. Always good having you here.
Root Beer should be all our jams.
Root Beer is all of our jam. I need to drink more Root Beer. I don't drink enough Root Beer.
Mountain Dew, are you listening?
That's what I have now. I just finished a throwback, and now I have some Major Melon.
So coming soon, Mountain Dew Root. What would they call? What would their version of it be called? Like, Rudy Tootie, or I don't know, Cardinal Root
Dew Beer.
I guess that would be just Dew Beer. Code Brown or something.
Oh, God. All right, we got to move on. Next game to talk about is called Blue Fire, developed by Roby Studios, published by Graffiti Games, released February 4th on Switch for $19.99. A dark world awaits. Travel through the perished world of Penumbra to explore unique area. Damn it. Unique areas filled with diverse enemies, sharp 3D platforming challenges, quests, collectibles, and more. Chris, tell us about Blue Fire.
Oh my god, I just so I had a complaint about the game, right? But I had just fired it up because I always like to have the game right in front of me when I'm talking about it. Mm-hmm. And it has an option to like turn off the thing I was going to complain about.
Oh.
So whoops, I didn't have to say anything, but now I have. Okay. So
what was the complaint? Now I want to know.
Okay, so Blue Fire is a third person action game, akin to like a Zelda or something like that. And it moves very fast. Like, your character moves fast, the action, you know, the enemies aren't particularly fast. They're meant to, like, you know, kind of play around with, like, different, like, I guess you could say, like, Dark Souls. Like, you know, they do damage if they hit you, but you have plenty of opportunity to let them not hit you. Anyway, it has, like, so the game is fast, so the camera is kind of fast, and I felt like the camera was maybe too fast, and I was just now looking in the options menu, and I was like, there's a camera smoother. So, you like, because I always felt like the camera was a little, like, you know, you move and it just starts, like, going in, like, this extreme, you know, way that, like, you can't focus in on something smoothly. Hmm. And, but now I can, so I don't have that complaint anymore.
Yeah, well, tell us about Blue Fire.
Okay, I thought I just did.
Well, tell us more about Blue Fire.
Okay, Blue Fire is, yeah, it's a, basically, you know, action platformer in a third person type of situation. You play as, I guess his name is Umbra. He looks like a chibi Casey Jones who loves Hot Topic. It's like Jason Voorhees in a hoodie with a pair of Ginsu knives on him. He's our Tiny Tim of the game, and you know, he's got a couple of big slashers on his back. And not much is explained. Of course, you just kind of start off in this tower. There's black and red stuff oozing out of the walls that hurts you if you touch it. Nothing is explained. And so, of course, you have to go on your adventure to figure out who you are and what the heck's going on and, you know, all this other stuff. Fortunately, there is a story. It is kind of revealed through meeting characters and, like, other things. And as soon as the first forced meeting comes in, where you have to meet like a pretty important character in the story, like, it pauses to like do the title card of that character when they pop in, and you're just like, oh, they really want to be Zelda. Like, it was totally like, you know, the way that all the Zelda boss fights do from Ocarina of Time onward, where they do a title card when they introduce a character. Anyway, but that is not to its detriment. It is, in fact, a good thing. So when you're running around in these dank halls with this like weird alien substance and like no idea who you are, and like you just know that when things pop up, you can slash them to death, you're like, okay, so this is going to be like kind of a dull run around, you know, different rooms and slash things like kind of platformer, like, okay, cheap stuff, overpriced. But then, like, once the world opens up a little bit and like you kind of found your feet, then you actually start doing the things that the game actually wants you to do, which are the following. Of course, there's exploration, and the more you kind of complete, the more abilities and powers you unlock in order to get to different areas. And then, you know, do the same. So it's got that Metroidvania vibe to it, even though it is a 3D game. So like that kind of, it's a little bit of a genre bender in that sense. And then there are several, in fact, what you would call voids. And, you know, that's your first character forced interaction is actually a, you know, a mysterious person explaining voids to you. And voids are the way that your character grows. If you can complete a void section of the game, then you get another section of life or whatever. Now, the voids are basically, it's kind of like in newer Super Mario Brothers games where like you just go down a pipe and it just takes you to this other place. And then, you know, you can do a thing for like in Mario Odyssey for like an extra moon or something like that. That's what they are. They're just extra challenge platforming sections, no enemies or anything like that. And as soon as you start doing voids, then you realize that this game actually means business, because the actual platforming parts of this game is where like all of the challenge and design like kind of went. Like it feels like a game that's going to tilt really heavily towards combat, but then it like, you know, the like somebody puts their finger on the other side of the scale marked platforming and just pushes it all the way down to the ground. Like that's how this game gets. So, you know, you start off with like a jump and then a jump and a dash. And so you have to like utilize both of those, and then you end up with a double jump. And so you have to utilize those double jump and a double jump and dash. And then like a, you know, a jump slash an enemy dash, double jump dash kind of thing. Eventually you get wall jumps and wall running, and it just becomes like this really athletic, like ninja style game. And, you know, which of course makes sense considering the character, because he's like knee high to every other character. Really, it's adorable. He's like an adorable little psycho. I love him. And but yeah, like basically, you know, you go through this game and it's just like, oh, okay, so this is like a really challenging game, but like it's challenging in a way that you weren't expecting. It's actually all the games I'm reviewing today have like this connected thread of like, why is this like this? And for this game, yeah, it's the fact that like they put a really clever like kind of platforming game into like something that like just kind of seems like it's going to be like an everyday just action game or like an exploration game. But it's like, yeah, it's more in the like Metroidvania and stuff. And so it's one of those things where if you like put, you know, if you just look at it or look at pictures of it or whatever, you'll be like, oh, okay, I get what this is supposed to be. But you like actually put like 20, 30 minutes into the actual game, and it'll really draw you in because it's kind of cool. And the other thing is, you know, speaking to Tim's review, if you do get killed in the game, then there is in-game currency that lets you purchase upgrades and also dance moves.
Nice.
I still don't quite know what the dance moves are for, but I got the techno one.
Dancing,
which is
duh.
For dancing, yeah. You can make your character dance. But anyways, so you get currency from like defeating enemies and just from stuff laying around or like attacking certain breakable objects and stuff. And, you know, if you die, then you will lose like all of that, I think it's pretty much all of it. And, you know, but it does have the rescue system where, you know, like if you find the spot where you died, then you can like go back and collect your stuff. But if you die getting there, kind of like Shovel Knight, then you just lose it. But fortunately, that stuff is like not central to the game. It's just very much like, you know, and the combat is like forgiving enough that if you're like trying to grind up a certain amount of this stuff, like you can do so without dying. Plus, it has like health potions and things like that. So, you know, you'll be fine. But yeah, it's a challenging game. It does chug a little on Switch in certain places. Like that was a concern of mine when I started running through this, like the first part of the game. And I was already like, oh, this isn't that smooth. I feel like I'm in for a bad time. And I have read from other people like, you know, there's certain areas of the game that get a lot more busy graphically and they can actually crash the Switch. As far as I know, they haven't patched it, but these seem like they're patchable issues, so I'm not going to make too big a deal of them. Once you actually get into the like the meat and potatoes of jumping around platforms and stuff, like the game moves just fine. It might be because I've been playing it like I've been interspersing like that game and Super Mario Odyssey, which of course Mario Odyssey is like works perfectly because Nintendo knows the magic spell to get their system to work really well.
Yeah.
But no, the game's fun, and I was actually surprised by it. I did not think I was going to like it as much as I did, but you know, I put in the time, and I feel like you should too.
Cool. So $20, your verdict?
$20, I think it's worth it. There's just looking at the options menu, because you know, it's one of those kind of games that like it shows you all like all the spots for items that you're going to get throughout the game, and there's a lot. So there's clearly content in this game. There's difficulty, there's a story. Like, I can't find anything to like complain about for content, so that would be the only reason I wouldn't say it was worth $20. So I'm gonna say it's worth $20.
Cool, sounds good. Yeah. Next game is called Rustler Grand Theft Horse, developed by Jitsu Games, published by Games Operators and Modus Games, released February 18th on Steam Early Access for $24.99. Become a medieval thug in a crazy open-world action game full of pop culture references. Complete insane quests, kill heroes, steal horses, fight guards, rob peasants, listen to some bard music, and much more. All packed in old-school gameplay style. Purnell, tell us about Rustler.
Be perfectly honest with you, it's a real simple explanation to it, and you kind of stated, they stated it in their title, it's essentially Grand Theft Auto, but medieval-like, you know? So, it's called Grand Theft Horse. It is kind of in a top, it's a top-down game, so it's meant to more so reference games like GTA 1, 2, or like London, as opposed to the later games, and much of the concept of it works that way too. The main character's name is actually Guy. It's kind of funny in its own right. Very nondescript guy. And he's essentially trying to enter a tournament, like a grand tournament. It's like the big scheme that he's got in mind, or rather his boss's scheme in mind. But in the process of going through that, there are other missions that he has to undertake and in order to progress the narrative. But it's a GTA style game, so in that regard, it hardly matters because you're going to spend most of your time putzing around and doing everything you want to pretty much just engage the game. So, aside from general running around in the game, instead of cars in this game, you have actual horses, and they come in a variety of flavors. You actually steal someone's horse; it has an actual name, just like a GTA car would, and different horses have different speeds and things of that nature. So you'll be probably coming across your own favorite horses and becoming content with that. Of course, if you happen to be seen, you know, committing some sort of a crime, maybe hitting a peasant or attacking someone in the of the law enforcement variety or whatnot, you might get John Q. Law on your butt. And you might be thinking, how in the hell am I supposed to ditch them in a world that doesn't have cars and, you know, paint spray stations? Well, in this game, they somehow still have paint spray stations. It's just they spray paint horses. So you just go into a spray paint facility, and they spray paint your horse a different color, and you lose the law. It's kind of interesting how that works. I did kind of find it interesting how like that slight element of the game kind of dances around like the whole this is medieval, because aside from some of the references the game makes to things that are definitely not medieval, there's also just spray paint. Like, people have tagged walls all over the place, like, the king is shit, or, you know, fuck this place, or stuff like that. It's like, where'd they get the spray paint? This is a medieval time. But I digress, because it's I still blood. Chuckle at oh, blue blood. Oh, get it? I died. I killed me. But basically, it's other parallels, like the weaponry in this game isn't guns and bats or whatnot. It's broadswords and like crossbows and torches and just general melee fisticuffs. You can do normal attacks as well. You have normal attacks as well, like a block and a parry system, where if you block it just the right time, you can kind of counter the guy and do super damage, which I do kind of appreciate there. The crossbow itself is kind of funny because it's the ranged weapon that you get for the game. However, it is a crossbow. So you fire a bolt, and then you have to reload the crossbow in order to fire another bolt. You can't just spray a crossbow. And in order to reload the crossbow, you have to actually stand still to do it. So it makes for some odd moments where you shoot a guy and you miss. You're like, well, crap, now I got to stand still to reload the crossbow. But this jerk is chasing me the whole bloody time. What am I supposed to do? Not suck at firing crossbows, for one. But of course, that's not your fault when an enemy takes more than one crossbow. So it's just the nature of the beast, you know. The humor in this game is kind of all over the place, too, in its own right. Like, the very beginning of the game has an actual live-action intro, which I will say is not laugh-out-loud funny, but it does make you kind of smirk at what they do. Like, they attempt to give you, like, this little narrative, this funny narrative of a guy being a rabble-rouser in a medieval town. You have, like, the looker lady sitting there, like, taking care of herself. You have the guard you kind of punch out and then, you know, fight. And you hang out with the drunkard, getting his beer or whatever. And it's just kind of fun to watch that. That was an enjoyable thing to kind of lead you into the game. If you are also in the general idea of, like, the collecting aspect of Grand Theft Auto games, you know, some had, like, packages, some had, like, just general secret items. This game has a variety of pick-upables, too. Things like, you know, just general armor items you can find, weaponry you can pick up to equip your guy with, musical notes for singing purposes. And you can also even pick up horseshoes. Horseshoes are what you use to unlock skill points in this game. For every 4, you get 1 skill point, and then you can go to your skills menu to unlock a variety of different perks, ranging from 4 categories. You have the combat category, which, as it sounds, is things that kind of boost your combat skills. Ranged for, you know, ranged attacks, whether it's using crossbows or, I don't know, flinging shit, like literal actual shit. There's the riding perks, which, by the way, do yourself a favor, get the riding perk that lets you pick up stuff while you're on horseback ASAP, because that's worth mentioning right now. One of the ways to get John Q. Law off your back when they're chasing you is to run around town and pull wanted posters off the walls. Pull enough wanted posters down, they forget you exist because these people are really fucking dumb. However, if you don't have that ability that I just mentioned, you have to get off your horse, walk up to the poster, rip it off, and then get back on the horse. I'm going to tell you something. When you're being chased by jerks, that's not really a great thing to do because they will mess your day up. And then, of course, the last category that I forgot to mention is social. So primarily things like, you know, spending money to hire bards and also, you know, not lose your gear when you get arrested, because when you get arrested, you do lose all your weapons so that you've been sitting on. So that kind of blows. And speaking of bards, that was probably, you might remember this, the thing that I was questioning the most about this game. I was like, okay, if they're trying to do Grand Theft Auto, how will they do radio? There was no radios in the medieval times. Well, you had bards, nature's radio. and in this game, they do take the role of the radio. You run around town, and every once in a while, you might hear a bard singing or crooning a tune or beatboxing a tune, because apparently they beatbox here. You walk up to the guy, drop him a few doubloons, and he will follow you around and play music for you. He'll get on your horse with you and play music. If you want to change the tune, you just punch him in the stomach, and he'll change the next track. Just punch the guy in the gut. He's like, oh, new tune, no problem. You got it, sir. And there's something kind of hilarious about that, because it's like medieval techno, medieval beatboxing, and just... they take a bunch of different general genres and try to give them like a medieval twist to be like, hey, look, he's playing R&B on a loop. No, he's playing techno on a loop. That's cool, right? But I did kind of get a bit of an appeal to that. Though I will say one thing that kind of annoyed me that, I mean, kind of take it or you leave it, some people might like it, some people don't, is that when they have conversations with other characters in this game, they do that like almost like Banjo-Kazooie talking, which... Banjo-Kazooie, I wasn't a big fan of it, but I got used to it because, quite frankly, animals sound wacky and they all have their own different version of the squawk sounds. But in this game is just like a generic, like, okay, I get it. Everybody's got that thing stuck in their throat and they can't quite get it the hell out. I get it. But it's there for whenever people are talking. So if that's something that is not an issue for you, oh well. I mean, you're fine. But if it is an issue for you, woof de doogle. Though, on the positive, you can turn character audio down, so you might be able to just get rid of that. But then I kind of feel like it's weird to not hear them talking. So it's a dilemma. I don't like the sound, but it feels weird when they don't say anything, and I know they murmur. So it's like, what do you do? I don't know, but at least you have the option. You can have a dilemma like mine, or you can be normal and not. But for the most part, the game itself, it plays well. I enjoy just kind of putzing around the game world that they have set up here. The only gripe I mainly had so far, for the most part, is that in typical games like this, your obvious goal will likely be to just like piss off John Q. Law and then see how long you can evade them without getting caught. Oh, yeah, I'll talk about this now. I mentioned the one odd thing I just remembered to say. So you'll be, you know, on horseback trying to outrun enemies, trying to fight them while on horseback. And then the big issue I had, though, was that it's really hard to evade the law if you stay on horseback and try to fight them, because it's like you're swinging at them and whiffing sometimes. And if they're actually chasing you, they almost always catch up because they have some badass horses and they just start beating the tar out of your cart. Like, you can't shake these assholes. They stay on you like, you know, butter on toast.
Butter.
And it's just, it's annoying. Like, I want to be better capable of evading the law. Like, I've basically tried ramming them in the walls. That's like the best option I generally get. But the thing I did want to mention that I totally forgot is that I also like the general touches they have on the environments you go to. Like, you'll ride down the street on your horse and a guy will empty a chamber pot out their window and it's just like splashes on the street. Like, that's gross. I'm not sure if it serves a purpose or anything, but it's the fact that it's even happening is kind of cool. You'll see hearts flowing out of a window randomly. It's like, clearly somebody's getting some love up in that building. Wow. Here we go. Hello. This God, I love the graffiti in this game. It's just so dumb. Like, it's not even clever graffiti. It's just dumb graffiti, which is what graffiti should pretty much be, because if it's not like freaking, like, you know, message, like, real message graffiti or like artistic, it's just kind of, oh, I was here. I'm here. So that's kind of what this graffiti is. So, but oh, no, I mean, I think this game is a fair bit of fun. Like, it's enjoyable, but I will say that as it is intentionally trying to build off of GTA, I think it's an accurate statement also that I would like to at least hope that you had a bit of appreciation for Grand Theft Auto Classic prior to playing this game. However, it's not to say you need to have, because you might be too old to have been around for that game. God, we're ancient people. In which case, this may well be a brand new experience for you. In which case, I say, personally, I prefer 2D GTA over the 3D ones. I do like the 3D ones, yes, but I've always been a more of a preference to the 2D game. So I think it's worth giving it a shot, because it's still a good time. Yeah. And it's an indie developer trying something as a nice little throwback. So give them some love. It's fun.
Well, it's in early access right now for $24.99. So is this something that people should be jumping on right now, or should they hold out for a bit and see how the game shapes up?
I'd say give it a shot now, because while it may not have as many events as it could after early access is over, I think the game is still fun in its current state. And it's not like, oh, I should mention this, though. I totally forgot, but this is very important. So we all know Purnell is a guy who has two laptops and he's a cheap bastard who never wants to use the good one, because why? I'm fucking weird. I don't know. Anyway, the point is, when I read the specs for the game, I kind of believed that my old computer should be able to handle it. The only thing it didn't really match up with was the OS. I have Windows 7 on there where it required Windows 10. So I tried to run it on there and it chugged like a snail. Like, it was atrocious. But I wasn't going to let it really get me down, because quite frankly, I shouldn't have been using it in the first place. Start using a decent laptop, lazy bastard. So I put it on the new laptop. And for those who don't know, it is a laptop, yes. But this should pretty much run every damn game out there right now on PC. This was like a top-of-the-line laptop, the first time I ever bought myself a top-of-the-line anything. So it should be capable of running these things. And I still had like moments of slowdown and stuff on occasion on this laptop playing the game. That may be a component of the early access build, I'll admit, but I still felt like it was something worth mentioning. It wasn't enough to make me go, this game fucking sucks. I can't even enjoy myself. But every once in a while, I'd be like, oh man, a little bit of a chug just happened. That's weird. Still a good game, though. Still fun time.
Cool. Just so still worth checking warning. Out.
I do think so. Just wanted to warn, staying with that guy, but Purnell never said that. What an asshole. No, I didn't.
All right. Well, we got to move on. Next game to talk about is called Summer Catchers, developed and published by Noodle Cake. Released February 11th on the Switch for $11.99. Embark on an epic road trip adventure of a lifetime in Summer Catchers. With your trusty wooden car, you must travel to distant lands full of mystery, strange creatures, and exciting races in your quest to finally experience summer. Chris, tell us about Summer Catchers.
Okay, so Summer Catchers is a game that is about a girl who wants to see summer. She only knows winter. And, you know, I feel it.
Sounds like Chicago.
Yeah, I know. Sounds like, yeah, I was gonna say, like, I was gonna make a joke about, you know, Texas, that, you know, oh, I wish I could see a summer just once, because I had a week of winter. But yeah, it was actually kind of funny to like boot this game up while I was sitting in a friend's house, like trying to shield myself from the winter. I was like, oh, it's a game about trying to escape the winter. Okay, great. Let's go. So yeah, it is a 2D like pixel art adventure. But here's the twist is that it is actually an auto runner. And so, you know, you actually don't see that a lot, like the combination of like something that actually really has a lot of care taken into like the presentation and like the an actual story, collectibles, side quests, things like that. But the actual gameplay is an auto runner. So, yeah, your main thing in the game is that, you know, of course, you run into a character called Funny Bear, who's actually a wolf. And he builds you a wooden kind of go-kart looking thing. And then, you know, basically a bulletin board pops up where if you can complete these side quests, then he'll tell you how to get out of the forest. And of course, it's where your adventure begins. So it's really interesting in that sense, because it's like, okay, then you go out into the stage, you're driving your cart. You don't actually control the cart. You can't make it you can't just make it do anything anytime. What you have is a backpack full of items, and you use those items to make the cart do certain things. So there's specifically a jumping item, so you can't jump over things just in the cart. You have to actually use an item, and the you know, these items you have to purchase from the shop that is in the hub of the game, because it's also got roguelike tendencies. Because every time, if you get hit three times, if your cart gets hit three times, then it crashes. You know, the girl lands in the snow and she's always fine. And then she drags her broken cart back to get repaired. And then, you know, you go to the shop, purchase more items, and then shove off again. The way you purchase items is through mushrooms that you just run over on the ground, and then they're added to your inventory. And then, yeah, you purchase like the different kinds of items and then use the items in the stage and try to get all the way through the stage, or more specifically, try to get the task that is on the bulletin board done. So it could be like plant three trees or something like that, or like collect 100 mushrooms, or, you know, anything like that. And like you kind of just have to figure that out once you're out there. So here's the other bit of a twist. And this, you know, this makes the whole thing pretty divisive. So I said that you have a backpack full of items that you have to use to actually control the cart. Like I said, the three that you start off with initially are a shield, that will protect you from like running into snow hills, or totem poles for some reason. And, then there's the jump, which will get you over spike pits. It'll actually get you over just about anything except the totem pole, because it's too tall. And then there's a rocket thing that will like kind of let you propel off of a hill, and then that can work as a jump and it can work as a shield, just depending on the context. Or it can, you know, just get you up in the air enough to like get a certain thing. Interestingly, when you're going to purchase them, they'll actually show you in little illustrations under each item what they're good for. So like under the jump one, it'll show hills and spikes, but like under the shield thing, it'll show like totem poles and hills and etc. So when you're actually in the game, the way it goes is that the backpack draws three items randomly from your items. So you can't just choose what item you want to use. So if you, and also the levels are randomly generated or procedurally generated. So that means while you're moving, without being able to stop, you're moving forward, you see a spike pit. If you have, you know, if you have a jump item, that's the only one that works, then you have to use it, and you have to use it at the right time. If you haven't drawn it, then you gotta like put others, you know, you gotta like use the Y button to like basically discard other items until you get a jump item. Now, here's the thing, when you discard an item, it doesn't just put it back in your backpack, you lose the item. Yeah, it becomes this crazy thing of like, it's an auto runner that relies on inventory management and random draws, which is like, even Bat and Kaitos isn't that confusing. And I know I've been playing that, as SML folks may know, but it's kind of like that. It's like it draws the cards randomly that you have in there. And of course, if you purchase more jump items, then more jump items will get drawn. But also, if you need a rocket item and you've got three jump items that are up there, you got to discard one of them and hope that you draw like a rocket item or something in the few seconds that you have. And so, yeah, it's pretty frustrating to actually play the game. And that is, it's not that it's not fun. I mean, it's a casual game at heart. And that's the thing, is that you are guaranteed to pick up enough mushrooms to replenish your supply. Like, this stuff is like, you have to purchase these items, but they're cheap. It's like you could collect like 100 mushrooms in a run, and like a jump will cost 5 mushrooms. And then if you don't use any items at all and you just let yourself crash, that's actually grinding, because you always keep whatever mushrooms you run over, no matter how badly you play.
That's
or good. If you just, yeah. So it's like, it's not a big deal. It's still a casual game. It's just, you know, again, this is a game that, to which I say, why is this like this? And that's further like complicated by the fact that like, this is such a lovely game. It is nice looking. The writing is really good. The music is really good. You can actually listen to the whole OST on YouTube, because it started its life as an app game. So I think that's why maybe it has this simplistic yet random, you know, style of gameplay. Oh, and that's the other thing, is that, you know, you have to choose from your three items, but there's no like wraparound. So you like have to use a D-pad to go either up or down, but not around. And I don't know. It's weird decisions. They could have like mapped it to buttons, because they're not using the other buttons. No. Anyways, whatever. It does have an easy mode that actually does make it really manageable. But it's like, aesthetically, the game is so nice that in the pixel art especially, like usually I'm pretty easy to impress with pixel art, but it's especially good in this game. Like, stuff that happens in the background is just gorgeous. And like, I wish that it was a different game. I wish it was just like a challenge platformer or Metroidvania, like all the indie darling games. It's like, it's weird because it's, you know, a $2 gameplay in a $20 aesthetic to make a $12 game that I don't even know how to take in, you know?
Yeah.
But I will say I did keep going back to it. So, I mean, it does its job of keeping you engaged.
Well, then $12 on it. What is your verdict?
I'm going to give it a try it. If you are a fan of auto runners, then this is probably the best auto runner I've like played in terms of like how good it is at everything else. Like, it's not, you know, like auto runners tend to be really, really thin on everything but the actual act of just making your character jump when you need to.
Yeah.
Like, this game doesn't even have that. So it's like, if you like your auto runners to be a little bit elevated, then I would say definitely check this one out. But for people who are more averse to challenge or easily frustrated, then it's a beautiful looking game. But yeah, I would call it a try it, because I wish it was a different game.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, we got a couple of sub $10 games, so I swear to God, if any of these reviews go over 10 minutes, I'm going to punch you. That goes to both of you.
Did mine just go over 10 minutes?
I don't know. I'm just saying.
Oh, okay.
Is that next up is a $4 game. If that goes 10 minutes, I quit.
No.
Start your timer. I'm ready. Let's go, Chris. 20 minutes.
Next.
Was that my intro? Do I go?
Now, what game? I don't know.
So when I was a child, I used to really enjoy
shut up, Pernell. Next game to talk about is called Blastful, developed and published by PlayStage Interactive, released February 23rd on PS4, 25th on the Switch for $3.99. I love the description for this game. This is the entire thing. Blastful is a fast-paced arcade shoot 'em up. Chris, go.
Okay, two things wrong with that description. One, it is not fast-paced. It's actually kind of slow. Two, it is nothing like an arcade game. It's more like a Windows 95 game. Okay, so Blastful is a vertically scrolling shoot 'em up, but it acts more like a single-screen game. It actually acts a little bit like Asteroids, because enemies come from, you know, enemies and especially enemy fire come from all directions, and you turn your ship to meet them. But it's not a twin stick shooter. What you're kind of doing is you, with the right stick, you are pointing your ship in a direction, but it's one of 8 directions. So it's got like, you know, 8 set directions.
Hmm.
when you play through the game, it's got about 20 stages. It's random. It's procedurally generated. So enemies come at you or don't. I don't know. But they come at you very slowly and they shoot very slow missiles at you. You can actually, and there's no incentive to defeat them except for score. You can actually just ignore the enemies and beat the bosses. And the bosses is always like, they're these bigger ships. They take up like, you know, they're about 10 times the size of your ship. They have guns on top that you shoot first, and then you shoot the ship itself. Then it blows up and you go to the next stage. It's weird in the sense that it does not really scale up in difficulty. Like, they do add a couple of different enemy types, but it's kind of like everything in it is kind of, you know, it's a little chuggy. So it's kind of like, and on the enemy's part too. So, you know, it's kind of easy in that sense, because the screen will fill up with missiles eventually, but like, if you just find a spot where the missiles can't get to you, then just wait. And there's different upgrades that float through the sky. Eventually you get other guns that you can like scroll between, but your, you know, usual gun, which works on everything, is just like this little pea shooter that does little missiles and stuff. So there's no like epic spread shot like you would see in an arcade style shooter. Yeah, it feels like a really interesting take on Asteroids or like Winroids or something like that. And it does look nice. I actually really like the backgrounds on this. It's just, it's a budget title, so it looks accordingly.
No.
So there, well, you go. That's it.
$4. What do you say?
I say it's a fuck it. Why not? If you're into shmups and you don't really care, like, that, you know, that it's not like the other ones. It doesn't offer anything super compelling, but it is new. Like, it's different. So if you're looking for a different experience and you got $4 to spare, go ahead.
Cool. All right. Next up is Woodle Deluxe, developed by Chubby Pixel, published by Chubby Publishing, released February 18th on Steam for $5.99. Woodle Deluxe is an old school 3D platformer game set in a super colorful world. You'll find all the classical elements from the 90s, venturing alone or in co-op with a friend. Travel across the Woodle lands in a total of 8 wonderful worlds and save everyone, bringing back peace and balance. Pernell, tell us about Woodle Deluxe.
Start the timer. So, Woodle Deluxe is a honestly rather charming platforming game. You're a little tree man who can jump. He can run. Actually, he doesn't run. He just walks at his normal pace, and he can attack using a magic leaf. As you play through the game, the idea is that you go to different hub environments. Well, there's a hub world, and you go into different portals that let you engage in different environments. And the goal of each environment is to find 3 fairy tears hidden throughout the environment, taking them to the end of the level and planting them into the, I guess, magic pots or whatever. And that ends the goat level. In addition to just finding the fairy tears as you play through the level, you're also collecting berries. They're just like, kind of think of them as like Mario coins, but the purpose of them is to unlock additional levels in the game and also upgrades to your leaf. All the upgrades pretty much increase gives it the ability to like throw like a wind bit and also leave like a wind trail after you throw the wind projectile, which is kind of nice. You explore these environments, get the berries, get the tears, complete the stage, wash, rinse, repeat until you're done. There's enemies that exist in the environments themselves, but they're never really an issue, except for early on, because it's kind of hard to gauge the distance between Woodle and their enemies themselves. So sometimes, like, an enemy's running at you, you try to swing your blade leaf, and he'll just crash into you and kill you. That killed me quite a few times, which thankfully there's no real penalty for dying. You just go back to a checkpoint. But fortunately, once you get your first leaf upgrade, which comes very quickly, and you're able to throw a projectile, much of that concern goes out the window. I kid you not, I didn't die again after that. Once I got the first upgrade, I never died again. And the funny thing about this game is that it's a lot of fun. Like, I beat the entire game in one sitting, and I felt joyful the entire time. The music is kind of light and relaxing. The gameplay is very, very simple. Even when the levels start to open up and become more expansive and large, you never really feel lost. It's more like a matter of, like, okay, this world is big, but choose a direction and go in it and get your stuff. Because there's always the levels are always kind of built with like a series of different like pathways you can take. It never really feels like you're like, I can get lost wandering around. It's just choose a direction, go there, and fulfill the obligations on that route. And then go to the hub and do it again. So I had a lot of fun playing it. And the only real detriment I had for the game was that the camera can be a real pain in the ass. When it works, it's fine because it's kind of fixed. And the old thing you can do with it is like zoom in and out with it. But every once in a while, you might try to zoom in a way the game doesn't like. And if you make the wrong turn while zoomed out, it might try to reset itself in a way that places it in a precarious spot, resulting in a lot of frustrating jumps. Also, the wind tower that exists in some areas where you jump into it and it blows you upwards is a little tough sometimes to land within that wind tunnel, and I've lost a few lives trying to make that work. But again, I played through the entire game in one sitting. If I didn't like this game, I don't care how simple it is, I would not have done that. It's a good time, and it's a cheap time too. So admittedly, though, I will say this, because of that camera issue, in a sense, I almost feel like if you want something longer anyway, I still think I'd put Woodle 2 there. But Woodle 1 is still a good time. But Woodle 2, you can float. It's also a larger game.
I actually kind of preferred the first one over the second. I thought the first one was more simplistic and just easier to get into, and the second one was just massive, and it felt like the worlds were too big.
And that's exactly, I can agree with that. Like, it's a logical reason for preferring the first game, because again, the first game, I beat it in one sitting. It's a short title. Like, you can't even float. There's no float jump. You don't need it, but man, it would have been nice to have it. I was trying to do it and it didn't work, so I thought maybe I was forgetting it, but no, it's just not there. But in that regard, it may well just be a matter of like preference too. Like, Woodle 1 is very short and succinct, but it's enjoyable short. So if you're okay with the idea of it being short, that's what you're looking for, you really can't go wrong here. Again, just know that you're going to get frustrated with the camera at times, but there's so little pain and failure that it hardly matters. Like, you'll deal with it.
And let's be fair, I don't believe there's any 3D platformer that has a perfect camera.
That is true. I feel like the closest we've ever gotten was probably some of the later Mario games, and they still have moments where they suck too.
Mm-hmm. So $6 on Woodle Deluxe. What do you say?
I'd give it a buy. And how many minutes was that?
That was 5 minutes.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Good shit.
Beatings for me.
You're safe this week, Purnell. Next game is called Dungeons and Bombs, developed by Pigeon Dev, published by Sometimes You, released February 26th on Xbox, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $4.99. When enemies drag people into their dark lair and do their vile deeds there, the hero and his faithful sword always come to the rescue. But what if the hero does not have a sword, but only a lot of enthusiasm and an endless supply of explosives? Well, bad for them. Go through the dark labyrinths of dungeons and try not to blast yourself up. Chris, tell us about Dungeons and Bombs.
Try not to blast yourself up. Well, I looked into it, and this is actually, I have now reviewed all but one of the Pigeon Dev catalog. The only one I haven't done is Awesome P 2, but like, these are the same folks that made Awesome P, Bucket Knight. I haven't done Voxel Tanks, but Explosive Jake and now Dungeons and Bombs. Anyways, so I thought this is going to be like Explosive Jake or like Bomberman or even like Mad Age and This Guy, which is a game everybody has in their collection because it only cost a penny at some point. But I am the only one who's played it. It's a Bomberman clone. Anyways, so this looks like it aims to be a Bomberman clone, but actually what it is it's a kind of game where you start off on one end of a like stage, and the princess, and we'll get to the princess, is on the other side of the stage, and you have a certain amount of moves to move one square at a time to get over to the princess. If you are impeded by like occupying the same square as an enemy, which they move in a pattern, so they're not like, you know, purposely following you or anything like that, or like if you run over spikes or something like that, then it takes two counts off of the timer. And because this is a game that was approved by Sometimes You, it is exceedingly difficult because you really do have to play it perfectly or at least very cleverly in order to get to the other side of the room. You can use bombs. They take a turn, but they are useful for clearing out a obstacle. But more often than not, what they're there for is just to adjust the timing. If you want to stand still and you need like one more moment of time to pass, then just set a bomb down and one more moment will pass. And then you can like adjust your movements accordingly. You can do this to like walk between enemies or adjust like these spikes that, you know, that alternate in and out like every turn, things like that. So it's a brain game like that. And yeah, like there's no, like you do have infinite bombs, but you don't have infinite time. So actually, you're not going to be blowing up too much stuff in this one unless the level actually calls for it. The only other interesting thing about it is that the princess herself is a princess who is well known for her beauty, ellipses, and her beard. She's got the face, the head of a stereotypical king with a beard and, you know, kind of, you know, male features, but then the body of a princess. And I'm like, okay, so when you do gender bending like this, you're either doing it to be representative or you're doing it as a joke. One is cool, the other is not cool, and I really feel like they're doing it as a joke. So, wasn't a fan of that. And, you know, the English is also absurd in it. And that's it.
Oh, $5. What do you say?
$5, hard to recommend, especially when there's like, you know, some possible, you know, bad stuff in the humor, of which there's only one joke. So, but the actual gameplay is just, it's frustrating. And, you know, if you do get into a rhythm of it, you can get through, you know, clear out some stages and stuff. But at no point was it like, you know, a world beater for me. And I do enjoy like games that are like this. It's just, you know, this felt more like just the, you know, difficult part of a Lufia dungeon. So I'm going to say it's a try it. If anything of this sounds interesting, apart from that, I'm going to say don't bother.
All right. Well, we got one final game to talk
Four
about
minutes.
Tonight.
Thank you. I beat him.
One final game called Active Neurons 3 Wonders of the World, developed by USANIC and Sometimes You, published by Sometimes You, released February 24th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $4.99. A puzzle that trains spatial and logical thinking. Power up your brains. Chris, tell us about it.
Okay, so everything I said about the previous game, just like flip all that around. And, you know, that's what this game is. So it's, you know, in essence, it is a puzzle game, but it doesn't have any characters or anything. You are a square. You're trying to get to a circle. Whenever you move your square inside of the field, the playing field, you will not stop until you hit an object. So the idea is to maneuver around the available objects and then hit the actual circle. Now, that sounds kind of dull, but the way that they design these stages and like the different things that you can interact with and in different ways, like this really is like legitimately makes you feel like a genius if you beat it. Like it's difficult but rewarding, and you know, it doesn't have, besides the, it has some pretty cool music actually. There's nothing else, like no characterization, no story. It's got the occasional, like a lot of the Sometimes You puzzle games, it has like these occasional flourishes of like prettiness in the graphics, but when you boil it down to it, it's just moving shapes around a field and, you know, yeah, training your brain. So yeah, that's it. And it's, like I said, it's fun.
Cats are knocking something over. I heard something crash. That did not sound good.
Hey, we're on a clock here. What are you doing?
I seriously don't know I don't know if the mic picked it up, but $5 on Active Neurons 3. What do you say?
This one, I'm going to give a buy it. I think this one's actually really clever. And you know, the Sometimes You puzzle games, like I said, I usually am not as positive on them because of their difficulty level, but this one actually feels more like accessible, I'm going to say. So yeah, it's a buy it for me.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
2 minutes. Still got
it. I like the quick ones like that. Not a huge, massive game. Easy to just talk about really quick and get through it. And oh man, long show, but a lot of reviews. We made it through. Chris, you're back. That's good stuff.
Yeah, until the next disaster, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for this episode. We made it through another one. We're done. Does anyone have any final words to end it, or should we just get to some music and end this show?
Girls on boats.